be when the order is given to censor your mind, as free speech is forbidden, as martyrs for peace from the world will be driven away by the sound of a bellowing thunder, and choke on the blood of a dream going under. From every direction, we cry revolution, standing together and without permission.
Welcome, this is Jason Rink, and this is the Liberty Voice Podcast. As always, we are just discussing the top stories at thelibertyvoice.com. First story that we want to talk about is entitled The Founding Fathers Rejected Democracy, and this story is from the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. The story begins, the Founding Fathers universally rejected democracy and hoped that posterity would never turn the United States into one. The word they used was republic, which is not synonymous with democracy. The word democracy is not in the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution, or the Bill of Rights. Even the Pledge of Allegiance is to the republic for which it stands. Benjamin Franklin defined democracy as two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch. Liberty is a well-armed lamb contesting the vote. So why did they reject democracy? Because it is inherently flawed with the share the wealth philosophy, which only works so long as there is someone else's money to share. Really, when we boil it down, this whole concept of democracy has been slowly injected into the American psyche over the last, 100 years. And I believe it was Woodrow Wilson who was the first American president to use the phrase, make the world safe for democracy. In fact, that was used as one of the justifications to get us into World War I. It's interesting because we aren't a democracy. We were never intended to be a democracy, so I'm not sure why we would want to make the world safe for democracy. In fact, I would like to make the world dangerous for democracy so that democracy wouldn't have a chance. Why? Because democracy is a Ponzi scheme. And according to Frederick Bastiat, democracy is organized plunder. And this quote by Benjamin Franklin where it says that democracy is two wolves and a lamb voting on what to have for lunch, that's the idea, is that in a democracy, the minority is not protected. The majority is protected. And no matter how small the minority is, or really how large the minority is, that minority can have its rights taken away from it, its property taken away from it, by majority rule. And this country was not intended to be designed to run by majority rule. See, we have been misled and miseducated throughout our entire years of schooling that we live in a democracy and that majority rules. But that is not the case. We were put in a republic, and a republic was specifically designed so that it would protect the rights of the minority, of the little guy. And so government, this is something that we've always got to remember, government has no money of its own to dole out to people. You see, a democracy is a Ponzi scheme because when people learn to vote benefits to themselves from the government's coffers, it requires that there are producers somewhere along the lines filling those coffers. Because government does not sell a product in the free market that we buy. It doesn't produce a product or really provide a service that we are paying it directly for. No, what government does is government extracts money from the producing classes, and then it provides the services that those producing classes and the classes who are not providing the money to fund those services also want. And so the classes of people or the groups of people, I don't want to use classes to make it sound like this is all about rich and poor. It's not. It's about people with agendas, and it's about special interest groups and constituencies who get together and they lobby the government to provide a good or a service or a benefit that benefits themselves or their constituency. And if they have enough influence, and if they have enough money, or if they make up a large enough voting block, they get what they want. And it doesn't matter if they're the ones that are funding it. And so it is a pyramid marketing scheme. And that's the funny thing that we need to remember is that, you know, government is this, multi-level marketing scheme that people would go to prison trying to pull that off if they didn't work for the government. And, you know, Bernie Madoff would have been a perfect government employee. He should be running Social Security right now because that's the ultimate Ponzi scheme that the government's been able to pull off in front of us. So the big danger here is that the longer people are able to use democratic processes to vote themselves benefits from the government, the more institutionalized it becomes and the more difficult it becomes to return to a republic. That's why we're in the predicament we're in, because we've been living in this democracy for so long, and people are so used to getting these benefits that they've been getting for so long that nobody wants to let them go. And so this article goes on. This is a really great quote that's in here. It says, Fraser Tyler, author of The Decline and Fall of the Athenian Republic, authored more than 200 years ago and said this best. A democracy cannot exist as a permanent form of government. It could only exist until voters discover that they can vote themselves largesse from the public treasury. From that moment on, the majority always votes for the candidates promising the most benefits from the public treasury, with the result that a democracy always collapses over loose fiscal policy, always followed by a dictatorship. And, you know, the founders pointed out and believed that democracies always commit suicide. They always collapse on themselves, and what happens is because we have a culture that is so conditioned to looking to the government as the provider, when this society collapses and when our nation falls into economic disarray, instead of people looking at the government as the cause, they have been trained and conditioned over decades and decades of looking to government as the solution, and what they demand is a dictatorship. They demand a strong central government to solve the problem, forgetting that it was government itself that caused the problem. The second article I want to point your attention to is CIA director says USA has not had good intelligence on Osama bin Laden in years. And what it says is that the United States has not had good intelligence on the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden, the Al-Qaeda leader, in years. Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA, admitted on Sunday. He also gave a sobering account of the war in Afghanistan, saying the Taliban seemed to be strengthening with a stepped-up campaign of violence, even as U.S.-led forces undermine the Islamist movement with attacks on its leadership. Of greatest concern, he said, was Al-Qaeda's reliance on operatives without previous records or those living in the U.S. He goes on to say about bin Laden, since then, it's been very difficult to get any intelligence on his exact location, he said. He is, as is obvious, in very deep hiding. He is in an area of the tribal areas of Pakistan. Okay, that was kind of a difficult sentence to execute there. But what the point is here is that we've been in Afghanistan for going on 10 years. It's America's longest war, people. Afghanistan is. We've been there. We've been embroiled there. We've been looking for Osama bin Laden and trying to stop Al-Qaeda. Okay? Now, this is not the time necessarily to get into the fact that once upon a time, Osama bin Laden was actually an ally of ours. We actually funded the Taliban in the 70s when we had a common enemy of the Soviets, and that much of what we're experiencing in Afghanistan right now and in the Middle East right now are the chickens coming home to roost. Don't tell me that I hate America. Don't tell me that I said that America's to blame for the work of terrorists running planes into our buildings. That's not the point. The point here is that actions have consequences, and our foreign policy has consequences. And what's going on right now is the CIA and Leon Panetta and our government, they're scratching their heads, and they're saying, you know what, we're making some progress against the leadership in Afghanistan, but there's all these other groups of people that are sort of turning against us, that don't have previous records, you know, and what they're seeing is a classic insurgency. What they're seeing is they're seeing civilians and people who've seen their land, their livelihood, their families destroyed, and they're starting to turn against the occupiers. This happens in nations that are dominated by a foreign presence. Look at history. And we've got to get our heads out of the sand and realize that we are in trouble over there. This war is not going to end quickly. It's not going to end well. It's getting worse. And marching General Petraeus over there to implement a new surge strategy is probably not going to end well either. In fact, many people have pointed out some of the parallels between this war and the Vietnam War. What's also interesting is that Bin Laden can't be found. Now, I'm not going to jump on the conspiracy train, even though the conspiracy train many times is the factual train, and many times the truth lies in what people call conspiracy. But in this particular instance, we've got to ask ourselves how long an individual who, around the time of September 11th, was on dialysis, has had kidney problems for a long time. We got to wonder how long that individual can roam around in caves in Pakistan before they either are discovered or die. And there is some evidence out there that you can check out that it may be possible that Osama bin Laden is not alive anymore. And that the reason I'm bringing this up is because it says in here, Panetta says, he is in very deep hiding. And I thought that was kind of humorous. If in fact Osama bin Laden would actually be dead, then in fact he is in very deep hiding. I have no evidence personally that he's dead. Something that I like to think about, because I think he becomes an effective enemy that can be sort of trotted out there with a videotape here every once in a while, that nobody's actually seen, that he's not popped his head up for a long time, and it can continue to justify our continued military excursions in the Middle East if Osama bin Laden is in fact dead and gone, and not from capture, and not in a celebrated military execution, but of actually natural causes. The Al-Qaeda and the terrorists in the Middle East are going to function without Osama bin Laden, because what we're dealing with over there right now has been fueled in a big way by American foreign policy, presence in the Middle East, meddling in affairs, standing and funding and supporting both sides of conflicts, raising up leaders and tearing down tyrants to replace them with our own puppets. That's what's been going on over there for the last 30 years. So check out that article on the LibertyVoice.com. And then finally, USS carrier Harry Truman now officially just off Iran as Israel allegedly planning an imminent Tehran raid. And I want to bring this article up as we're closing out here because it's tied in to the Deepwater Horizon article that we posted a few days ago and that I covered in the podcast. What that article indicated was that the federal government, Obama administration, green-lighted the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig. And actually, I believe it was green-lighted under Bush. I could have my facts wrong, but throughout the Bush-Obama administrations, BP was allowed to sort of fast-track this project, and a number of safety regulations were sort of waived because our federal government wanted the Deepwater Horizon rig drilled because there was 3 to 5 billion barrels of oil under there. And the reason they wanted to fast-track the project was because if we got into a war with Iran, then our oil supply would get cut off, and they wanted to make sure that we had oil independence for at least 8 to 10 months, which they believed this would provide. And so the reason this article ties in is because it just is another indication that we may be closer to war with Iran than our government is allowing us to understand, that they that they may be getting ready to get into another military conflict that is not declared by Congress, just like every military conflict since World War II. And this is not, you know, this is not playtime. A military excursion with Iran alongside Israel, this is a big deal. And so what this article talks about is that, you know, the Pentagon has confirmed that a fleet of 12 warships has passed the Suez Canal and is now likely awaiting orders to support the escalation in the Persian Gulf. And it talks about that there's a couple of carriers there, the Harry Truman and the Eisenhower, that are just waiting patiently off of Iran. As for the catalyst of the two carriers may be anticipating, we provide the following update from the Gulf Daily News, where we read that Israel may be on the verge of attack of Iran with an incursion originating from military bases in Azerbaijan and Georgia. And so the point is here, and again, the article goes on to say, look, the Gulf Daily News has not been the most reliable source, but, you know, at the same time, we've confirmed the fact that we've got an exceptional number of warships out there. So what is going on? Are we getting into war with Iran? Check out those articles at thelibertyvoice.com. We appreciate your support. $20 gets you a full year mailed to you. This is Jason Rink signing off with The Liberty Voice.
If you looked in the eyes of a thousand young children through fences of razors, their innocence stolen as the red flag of tyranny flies in the open, is that when you